I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, Jules. What a show.
Wow.
Because twists and turns in the Premier League title race.
Yes.
We'll be getting into that. We've got new Copa del Rey champion.
Yes.
That'll be the Bayern first trophy in 4 decades. We have Juve winning again. How about that? Bayern screwing the pooch again.
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen on the verge of a title. But there's one place to start. And it is at the Theatre of Dreams. That's right.
That's
Old
right.
Trafford. United and Liverpool battled to a 2-2 draw. A lot of people drew parallels with the FA Cup game and Amad Diallo's late heroics. I didn't see that. I thought this game was messy, but
Why was it messy?
It was messy because of the mistakes.
Oh,
I mean, you're talking not messy as in like it was good, like Lionel Messi.
I wondered, yeah.
3 of the 4 goals, I thought, major mistakes, right? But I also thought, if you're Liverpool, you're kicking yourself.
Massive.
You cannot dominate a first half where they could have easily scored 4 or 5 goals.
Yeah.
And then find yourself in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like Klopp after the game saying like, well, it's 1 point more than we had this morning, which is true. But you could tell that, yeah, you don't dwell on things because you have another game coming up on Thursday and then another one the following weekend, etc., etc. But you're fuming because you were so dominant.
And on the Klopp point, like when I think he was asked something about like, you know, do you wish you'd taken your chances in the first half or did you tell the players we need to be more clinical, whatever. And he said like, you know what, if it would help, I would tell them to take their chances, but it makes no difference. It's not going to help them. It's not like the players go and, I mean, he didn't say this, but it's my interpretation. It's not like, you know, Mohamed Salah says, oh, I think I'll go and miss this and like miss hit the ball when I'm at the far post.
He said something interesting. He said that he felt there's a few chances where they rushed it.
Yes.
He said, I would have liked them to have taken an extra touch. And sometimes, as a player, you see, you know where you're going to hit the ball and what corner or whatever, and you do it. But sometimes, taking an extra touch maybe calms you down a little bit. There's not that excitement. And maybe that would have been
it's
better.
It's really so funny like with
game
this.
Management.
This is a debate for another time. But the analytics people will tell you that you generally always want to take an extra touch to get into a better position to improve your XG of scoring. Right? That's the nerds. Other people, and I hear this all the time, say, oh, no, this team's trying to score the perfect goal. Just put it in the mixer. Just have a crack. Get a deflection. It's almost like there's two schools of thought there.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say this about United before we get to what Ten Hag's view of this was, which he's not helping himself. So they go into this game. I think I counted like 6 defenders out. So, you know, a lot of guys out.
Yeah,
you know, they knew they were going to be under pressure. Whatever you think about Ten Hag, whether he's good or bad, this United side are very resilient.
Yeah,
they're extremely resilient.
They have a lot of character. They worked really hard in the second half.
I don't know if that comes from Ten Hag or if it's the players, but what that tells me is these players, even the ones that you don't like, even the ones that you think are rubbish, are working really, really hard.
But let's be honest as well here, what changes everything is the Bruno goal. If Kwanzaa doesn't make that mistake and Bruno doesn't score the great goal, I don't think the game turns on his head the way it did. Because let's remind everybody that Manchester United had 0 shot in the first half. Their expected goals in the first half was 0. Just literally nothing. This was like then. They had nothing. They had 45% of the ball. They could not create anything. They touched the ball 7 times in the Liverpool box in 45 minutes. This is dreadful. And for me, if everything switches on 2 things. The Bruno goal, which is an amazing goal.
You know how many touches in the box they had in the second half, United?
No.
9.
You say it's not much better.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, to be fair, they scored 1 goal from almost just outside, the main one, and the other one from half an hour. And then, for me, changes on Ten Hag taking off Garnacho when they 2-1 up. There's no need to take Garnacho off. He would run and run for his life through the whole game. Don't take him off. And to bring who? Amrabat? I would have played better than Amrabat. That invited more pressure. And they went deeper and deeper and deeper. And, of course, they conceded the second goal.
I don't blame him so much for that because...
No, I do. Gab, you
if
have
you're
to.
Going to... You're going to play higher up. Okay, yeah, fine.
It changes the momentum. He's just having an outlet there. You take Garnacho off to put another defensive midfielder.
Anthony on to be your outlet.
Okay,
all right. I take your point. On the Bruno goal, I know this is where we disagree. I thought, obviously, it's a mistake from Kwanzaa. I thought it was a tremendous goal.
Yeah.
And I thought what was tremendous about it was Bruno sprints, and he's not very fast, but he's sprinting as hard as his little legs will take him. In a split seconds, he has to be aware that Kelleher's outside his box because where he was expecting to receive the pass from Kwanzaa. He has to know, he has to get to the ball first, and he has to one-time it. I don't think most professional footballers can do that.
I disagree.
You disagree. We're going to break this down further. Because I find this interesting.
Yeah.
I really think what Bruno did there was special. Jules thinks it was a great goal.
No, it's special. It's a great goal.
Others could have done it.
Yeah. Before I get abused by Bruno fans, this is an amazing goal. I'm not taking anything away from the goal. I'm just saying you think that
most people wouldn't have thought of
it. Okay. Roy Keane said the same on UK television after he said only Bruno could have scored.
I am team Roy Keane on this occasion.
Only Bruno could have scored. I was like, come on.
Right.
I saw Mourinho almost scoring from his own half against Spurs on Sunday.
The one where he looks up, controls the ball, and shoots.
I've seen this guy in the third division in France scoring in a very similar way to Bruno in the third division in France from even deeper than Bruno. All I'm saying, Gab, is at that level, and now I'm not even talking third division in France, I'm talking Premier League players. They scan all the time. They are aware of everything. He knew exactly where Keller was before even sprinting to get the ball. He knew that Kwanzaa was very likely, because that's what Kwanzaa does a lot. He's a young player. He doesn't right now have the maturity in his game, the awareness, maybe even the quality to take that ball forward. So what does he do? His default mechanism is, I'll pass the ball to Virgil. And Virgil then can Virgil has more responsibility in his game than
Kwanzaa. He didn't pass it to Virgil. He passed it 10 meters in front of him.
Yeah,
which was the problem.
No. But if there's no options in front of him, he will always go there. Always. This is what he does.
But the logical thing, though, would have been, and I almost feel like it's probably part of their build-up, though, pass it back to Kelleher.
Yeah, maybe. But then you invite the United block to go another 40 yards up.
And you ping it, and you Kelleher ping it on over the top to Salah, and you score.
If you pass it to Virgil, neither of the two blocks move. If you pass it to Kelleher,
of course, I understand all of that.
I just think that players of this quality, Bruno quality, and okay, maybe not defenders so much, but everybody in midfield, Casemiro would have scored it, Mainu would have scored it, Garnacho would have scored it. I'm convinced that they would have tried the same thing. It was the obvious thing to do. I watched on television, as soon as Kwanzaa passed the ball, I said to my son, Bruno is going to have the ball and he's going to shoot.
All right.
And that's exactly what he did.
Okay.
This is the dream goal. You know what? I guarantee you that all those players dream of a goal like this, of an opportunity like this.
Since everybody scans and knows where they are, Kelleher runs across. I'm assuming as he's going across, because he's looking at the ball and because he's at a full sprint, he can't know exactly whether he's inside the box or outside the box.
Yes, I agree.
He does reach for the ball, which makes me think that he thinks he's inside the box. Yeah. I don't even know where he is, but just... I just thought it was interesting.
Also reflex. Maybe it's just reflex.
It's got to be reflex. Yeah. It's got to be so much. Mm. But if he's outside the box and he touches it, he's also sent off. Unless it's a goal.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not blaming Kelleher in any way.
No.
That was a difficult position to be in.
But for me, clearly the game's, the momentum switches then, because after that, United have.
Yeah, the crowd
15,
get involved. And
great minutes, the crowd is on. And then Kobe comes up with another.
And again, this is another one. So that goal, I was watching on TV. I was struck by it because. Yeah, he's got time to turn and everything, but it is a ridiculous finish. Some people thought it was almost as good as Kiko Makeda against Villa back in the day. And I hope Kobe has a much better career.
I mean, he's a better player than Makeda. No offense.
And he goes on the sideline, and then the camera pans to Klopp, who's absolutely furious on the sidelines. You've got Van Dijk and Robertson, they look like they're having words. And I think to myself, okay, but this isn't a mistake on the goal. It's a tremendous goal. And you can take issue with the defending on letting him turn, but it still has got a ton to do. But it was more that moment in the game where it felt as if the momentum had shifted and Klopp was angry because Liverpool had allowed the momentum to shift.
No, I think he was angry that, so at the start of the move, the Kobe goal, Mainu is on his own in the center circle, receiving the ball, turning, and Klopp and Van Dijk and Kwanzaa are too deep. Robertson is too deep. Somebody should have come out on Mainu to not allow him to turn. It was too easy. He was literally in acres of space on his own, got the ball, turned, now face the Liverpool goal, and then there's another phase of play for him then to go and score, but that's where he should have never been allowed to turn. And at that level, this is a massive mistake. In a game like this, when United have scored, it's 1-1, You can't have taken those 10 yards back if you're Liverpool, if you're Virgil van Dijk. There was no threat in behind you. And Maynou was there on his own. And somebody, whether it was Endo, Virgil, Kwanzaa, Robertson, somebody should have
somebody in midfield should have done
and
it.
should have pushed up to be behind him, not allowing him to turn and force him to play either sideways or backwards.
All right, the goal that made it 2-1. That was the goal that made it 2-1. The equalizing goal, the Wan-Bissaka on Elliott tackle. It's funny because people keep saying, oh, Wan-Bissaka, some of the best tackling statistics in the Premier League and stuff like that. And there's a school of thought that also says,
don't go to ground.
This is a terrible metric by which to judge defenders, right? They're tackling because some of the best defenders in the world never tackle or hardly ever do, because if you do, it means something's gone wrong and you're collective defending, right?
Exactly. So
he makes the wrong choice because Elliot's going across him. I think Elliot is also very, very clever because he knows that leg is going to come across.
Yeah.
And he also knows that if he just nudges the ball forward, there's a chance that he'll get the leg, but he kind of protects it and keeps it on the other side of him.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's a stonewall penalty.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel a little bit for Elliot because I think he's been so good this season. Whether he was starting games or coming on as a sub, that on a game like this where Szoboszlai is maybe not at his best, certainly not at his best, in terms of he has a lot of activity, he runs a lot, he's present everywhere on the pitch. But then his last touch of finishing, he had a good chance where he blasted the ball over the top. He's got the one-on-one at 0-0, by the way. Yeah. Great save by Onana, but still, that's on Szoboszlai. And I feel that maybe Elliot deserves a little bit more. I mean,
more minutes, you mean?
Yeah, more game, because he's been so good for them. And he brings something different, especially in ball control, than Szoboszlai, who's good on the ball. But, you know, like, I don't know.
I think the difficulty there, I mean, look, I think he will get more minutes because they've got so many fixtures between now and the end of the season. I mean, we'll see how it goes now in the Europa League and whatnot. The difficulty there for me is, if you want to put it, you're not going to drop Szoboszlai, I think, because he's next level in terms of coming up with those moments, especially with Jota out and some of the other absentees you have. McAllister, I think, has to play.
He's the best of the three.
I think we agree, McAllister in front of the back four, you don't get full McAllister. No. You can ask him to do that. And so that means playing Endo, because you're not going to play Elliot in front of the back four. No. So then it becomes a question of, should Elliot be a bigger part of the forward rotation in the front three? And again, you get into an issue. Salah's untouchable.
Yeah.
Luis Diaz seems to have so much energy that he just keeps going all the time. And then you get into Darwin, and then it becomes a very different game. That means you play Salah more central, I suppose, if you were to play Elliot. So I think that's a difficult situation they're in. It's going to get more complicated. I think it's a good problem to have,
of course.
We're now with Jones back as well. I'm a big Curtis Jones guy before his injury anyway. I want to move it on, though. We mentioned Endo there. This was a game also, and it kind of gets lost a little bit because of the way it ended, but a number of Liverpool players had poor games in this one. We've mentioned Endo. We've mentioned Szoboszlai. Mohamed Salah isn't playing like Mohamed Salah. You know, is this a concern? Is this something
when your XG away at Old Trafford is almost 4? I don't think
there's no problem.
I don't think that I would not be concerned. And when again the game changes mostly on that Kwanzaa mistake, which is a youth mistake. It's not. You know, I think he will learn from it, and next time it would be differently. You're right, he might pass to Kelleher or just try something long. Even if he loses the ball, it's okay. So I'm not sure, and Klopp didn't seem worried. Yeah, of course, you drop 2 points because it is 2 points dropped, and now you don't have your own destiny in your own hands, because it's Arsenal's turn now. If they win all their games, they're champions, not you anymore, unless you outscore them, and then we go down to the goal difference. They're plus 9 ahead of you.
But you know I don't like goal difference.
Exactly. So that's why I'm not going to go there. So you could be disappointed by that, but I'm not sure. And yeah, you could be disappointed by a few individual performances there and there, but always, you never have your 11 starters who all play at their best. This never happens. So it would always be like that. So I don't think Klopp would be worried. I don't think Liverpool should be worried anyway.
Turn our attention to Erik ten Hag.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to first get all the mitigating circumstances out of the way, because this is somebody, he's had so much crap to deal with, from the change in ownership to injuries to this to that. Just injuries, just at the back. No Varane, no Lisandro Martinez,
yeah.
No Luke Shaw,
no.
No Terrell Malassi, assuming Terrell Malassi is still a footballer. No Johnny Evans.
No Lindelof.
Scraping the bottom. But who? Who? No Lindelof too, right?
Yeah.
So he's got to play Harry Maguire, who, again, younger listeners who might have forgotten this. This is the guy who, until deadline day, Manchester United tried every which way to get rid of, right? Erik ten Hag to show up to training, whether it was his decision, whether it was a club's decision, and say, and look at Harry Maguire and say, you're not in my plans. I don't want you here. Go away. Go to West Ham, right?
Yeah.
And then it doesn't happen, and he reintegrates him. I think Maguire's done his part. You know, he's been the terrible player that people describe him as. He's also not the most expensive defender in the history of the Premier League. So this is a lot to deal with, right? I mean, defense is still the kind of the base of your team, whichever way you want to look at it. And you can say he's been gifted Kobbie Mainoo. He's been fantastic, still 18. So I give him, I think there's a lot of mitigating circumstances there.
For sure.
A lot of mitigating circumstances and the absolute stupidity of going into the season with a 20-year-old center forward who's just arrived and Anthony freaking Martial as your backup, mitigating circumstances, Mason Greenwood, Rashford. Okay, all that out of the way. I don't know if he's good enough to be United's manager next season. That's a decision Ratcliffe is going to make together with the Glazers. Because lest we forget, Ratcliffe runs the football side, but the Glazers control the purse strings, and it costs money to move players on.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, the players are still following him. They're still resilient. They still seem to, at least when they're on the pitch, believe in him. And that is a credit to Ten Hag. His communication, however. If I were a United fan, I couldn't deal with somebody
coming
out. I
don't think they can deal.
Saying something like, I don't know if, like, you know, being positive and upbeat doesn't mean that you have to turn into Pinocchio. So when you say something like, well, we dropped... Well, I'm disappointed because in this week we dropped 7 points from winning positions. But you can clearly see we're a young team. You can clearly see how we're getting better. So the 7 points you dropped from winning positions, obviously they were winning this game. The turnaround, Chelsea's turnaround on Thursday night.
And against Brentford.
And the Brentford game where they got completely battered by a team that's, what, 2 points above the relegation zone?
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, you just stop it at we're disappointed that we dropped points. Don't talk about how your team is playing better, because guess what? People are watching these games.
But that's. But I've said to you before,
you
that every
this.
Time he talks, he thinks that he needs to convince Ratcliffe and Brailsford and Jean-Claude Blanc, Omar Berada, whoever he wants to convince, that he's still the guy for the job. So every time he speaks, he talks about process. Remember we talked about it on Thursday. Even that line was ridiculous. He talks about those points drop. He talks how great they are. Remember after the Fulham game, our XG was higher than them. We should not have... When
funny enough, he doesn't bring up XG in this game when you gave up 3.59.
Yeah, exactly. It's just that's what he does. And okay, maybe...
But he's not helping. Somebody should advise him. Somebody should advise him. Yo, why don't you get your friends at SCG to tell you? In fact, the founder of SCG, the guy Kroos, right?
Yeah,
he's got time on his hands now that he's being investigated. Maybe he can give you. Maybe he can ring you up and say, Eric, cut it out with this, right?
No,
just because it doesn't make him appear credible, and I think it's a shame because look, he's not the perfect manager. He may not be right for United, but he's done some good things, I think.
Yeah.
In difficult situations. Kamwala as well.
My boy, Paris-born. I mean, okay.
I thought he's from Congo.
Yeah, he arrived in Paris when he was 2 years old.
Okay, so he's not Paris-born to start.
He's Paris-bred.
He may be Paris-bred.
Bred, okay. Almost born and certainly bred. Amazing. 19-year-old. Come on.
And good story. He's had some serious injuries as well.
Yeah,
he's come back.
He
didn't
play for almost 2 years. They paid a lot of money for him when he was really young because he was that good.
4 million, I think.
4 million when he was a social. And now, hopefully, this will, you know, kickstart his professional career properly.
There you go. So, Congo born. Willy Kamwala.
Nah,
let's
come
clear
on.
This.
He moved at 2 years of age. Or
he
could
be Paris bred, but. Is it nature?
Come on.
Nature says Congo. Nurture says Paris. How's that, right? You can't claim everybody who's ever been to Paris.
He's still one of mine. He's still one.
You know Messi played in Paris too. What do you claim?
He's still one of mine. Yeah, but he didn't arrive in Paris when he was two.
All right, enough Ten Hag. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Arsenal are joint top of the table with a 3-0 away win against Brighton. Jules, amazing what happens when you play Georgie in midfield, Havertz up front, and Gabriel Jesus out wide, like God and Pep Guardiola intended.
Yeah, maybe. It was a really good performance, really, from Arsenal from start to finish, pretty much. I'm not even sure I really understand the debate over the penalty. I know Lamptey kind of brushes the ball with his foot, but then he takes out Gabriel Jesus, and for me, Gabriel Jesus could still have had the ball. That's why I explained on the FC show, because Stevie Nicol and Ale Moreno were not having the penalty. But Arsenal was so good, and Kai Havertz was so good, and they pressed so well, and they created so many chances. They could have scored more goals. And for a long time, they kept Brighton's XG below on 0.3. So, you know, away from home, that's another very impressive performance.
Yeah, I thought this was a more comprehensive performance. And we're seeing a multifaceted Arsenal, you know, because I'm not saying this was like the City game. They didn't do
it
the same way.
Well,
but you have some of those same elements.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's amazing. If you play Havertz in the... It's a credit to Arteta. He came in the 4-1-4-1, Gabriel Jesus up front. What happens? Havertz doesn't even score his first goal from open play until November or something. And now with this, it's a rational setup.
And meanwhile, Gab, Arsenal's opponent on Tuesday night in the Champions League quarterfinal first leg, Bayern Munich, endured a nightmare, letting a 2-0 lead slip away against Heidenheim.
Yeah, it's 2-0 at halftime. If you're 2-0 at halftime, if you have all these fast players, Serge Gnabry as well, getting back, you need to win the game. It's simple as. Harry Kane had a bunch of chances, only scored one, I think.
Yeah.
I think he might be carrying a knock. But the way they collapsed, they scored two goals within 1 minute in the second half. And you can look at it and go like, ha, 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 look at those weirdos, Bin Jae Kim and your boy Upamecano embarrassing themselves.
Oh, I mean,
but you know what? When there's no pressure on the ball, anybody can hit the ball over the top.
I know, but they can't defend.
No, all this stuff. We need a six. Yeah, we need a six in midfield. Yeah, how's your boy Limer doing as a six? This was a complete collapse. And I'll tell you what. Yeah. Max Eberl, who they brought in from Red Bull, who has the luxury of, he only took over March 1st, so he can say, yeah, I had nothing to do with all the stupid, crappy decisions.
This is not my mess.
Did you hear what he said after the game? He came out and said, it's not a case now of us being arrogant and saying, all right, whatever, season's gone, let's just finish second. He said, I question whether we're even going to qualify for the Champions League next year. Now, they will, because they're 7 points clear.
That would be funny.
But this tells you how serious it is. Yeah. And shout out as well to my man Kleindienst.
Yeah.
Two goals. Silly name, but still.
Really good. Yeah, very good.
Tottenham Hotspur are up into fourth place, Jules, with a 3-1 victory over Nottingham Forest. And former Spurs fan favorite, Nuno Espirito Santo.
That's right, going back to the Tottenham Stadium. A 3-1 win when they considered chances. I mean, I think Chris Wood could have had a hat-trick easily. He scored one.
You can explain to me, since you're Mr. Teckers, the one where he smashes the ball, you're 1 meter out.
But you've said it.
Why do you have to hit the ball
so
hard?
Exactly.
Just side-foot it, dude. Exactly. What is it? You got anger management issues?
I mean, between him and Schlotterbeck, I think those have to be the two biggest misses we've seen this season. Incredible. And so, yeah, it looks like a good result. Certainly, it is a really good result. But maybe the scoreline doesn't really reflect the way the game went, because I thought Spurs, for how good as they are going forward, and Pedro Porro scored a lovely goal, for example, to make it 3-1, they're also still very exposed defensively, and that has to change, because you won't go to the next level
Change. It's Ange ball. You take the good with the bad. You take chances.
Well, yeah, but then, yeah, but that's what I mean. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Gab, Forrest in that game were furious when Ryan Yates appeared to get punched by James Maddison off the ball. He called for a VAR intervention that never happened. Never came.
So, you know my feelings on Nuno, but he is 100% right.
I agree.
I thought this is absolutely ridiculous.
100%.
You can clearly see him. And look, I'm not. Maddison goes and he punches the guy in the stomach. Now, does he maybe make a meal? Ryan Yates is bigger than Maddison. I don't care. You cannot do this. And why
do you think it happened then?
I have no idea. Like, the referee presumably didn't see it. VAR should have intervened. If the referee said to VAR, oh, no, don't worry, I saw it, it was nothing, it was a coming together, as they like to say in this country, then you, VAR, have to say, no, hey, listen, you know, dumb, go look at the video, right? But it didn't happen. And this is big. This could have serious implications,
massively,
both for the Champions League places and for relegation. And yeah, if Nuno is 100% correct on this one.
I agree.
Manchester City roll to a 4-2 win away to Crystal Palace as Kevin De Bruyne returns to the starting lineup with a bang. 2 goals and 1 assist. Take that, Phil Foden.
Exactly. Where was Phil Foden? On the bench. To go back to our point about at some point, Pep might have to choose one or the other.
No, does this mean Pep is a motivational genius?
I don't know, but all I want to see now is who plays against Real Madrid and where. And both of them will start, obviously, but where? Can you try to play them both at 10s? Will you put Foden wide? But KDB, amazing. The first goal especially, because they were under pressure from conceding that very early goal. Mateta, John Stones doing a Kwanzaa, and then I'm not really sure what he does on the transition. But after that goal from KDB in the curler in the opposite top corner was amazing, and then they rolled on after that.
You know, he started just 8 league games a season, Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, I know.
Which, you know what? If part-time De Bruyne, keep him for big games, I'm good with that.
Maybe, exactly. Athletic Club de Bilbao win the Copa del Rey. Finals on penalties against Mallorca on Saturday night, Gab, is their first major title since they won the double 40 years ago, 1984.
That's right. I mean, again, younger listeners won't believe this, but hey, there was a time when teams other than just Real Madrid, Barcelona, and occasionally Atletico Madrid won La Liga. Again, for those who don't know, don't follow our Liga coverage, one of the things that make Bilbao unique is their Basque-only policy. You have to either be of Basque descent or have been raised in the Basque country. It's unofficial. It's unwritten. And the fact that they can compete despite that, when they're basically picking from a teeny tiny pool of players, is frankly just unbelievable. I think they could have put this away. Nico Williams had the goal, just disallowed, really, really tight. Mallorca put a good show. Looked phenomenal on television.
The atmosphere was incredible.
The atmosphere of the stadium. Producer Freddie was there. This is the third
in Sevilla,
time I referenced Producer Freddie in the show. I need to stop that.
But Bilbao had lost their last 5 finals. And it looked like at some point, you could tell by the nerves. And then Mallorca went 1-0 up. And then you felt like, uh-oh, man, could this be another night? And they won it on penalties as well. Berenguer with the...
By the way, you talk about nerves. I don't know if you noticed, but Mallorca's coach, Javier Aguirre, he got them to go and celebrate as if they had just won the title just before the penalties. And had that worked out, we would have been talking it as if it was a major psychological
ploy,
and everybody would be copying it. I know, but I thought it was cool. Sounds like something Erik ten Hag might do.
Yeah.
Chelsea scored 2 injury time goals on Thursday to beat Manchester United, but on Sunday they conceded an injury time goal against another United, Sheffield, who happened to be bottom of the table, and they had to settle for 2-2 draw. Jules, Pochettino says they're not mature enough and the process will take 3 to 5 years.
Okay. well, if you hadn't wasted that first season to start with, maybe the process would have taken less time, Poch, because I don't know where to start. It seems like, well, we said it all season long, it's 1 step forward, 2 step back every time. I looked it up yesterday after the game. Only twice this season they've won back-to-back Premier League games. Against Burnley and Luton and Brentford, like, against rubbish teams. And the last time was in December. It is just, there's no consistency, there's no direction from this team. I thought they were so bad in this game. So slow, so pedestrian. I mean, the XG is 0.6. Even Sheffield United has a higher XG. It's 1.4. I remind everybody, just to finish on that, because I don't want to go too harsh on Chelsea. They're just not good. He's not a good team. He's not a good manager this season. But Sheffield United had lost 5-0 against Aston Villa, 5-0 against Brighton, 6-0 against Arsenal in 3 of the last 4 home games before facing Chelsea, and they played better than Chelsea and they had more chances than Chelsea.
Yeah. 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Milan destroyed Lecce 3-0 as Christian Pulisic hits double figures in the league for the first time in his career, Gab.
Not just that, he hits 10 and he plays at number 10 as well and plays really, really well.
Really well.
This was a suggestion when he joined because they're like, well, but you play on the left, but we have Rafael Leao there. So he's been playing on the right all year. Pioli went for it. He played your boy Giroud up front, who also scored. Yeah. Played Leao, who played really, really well.
Yeah, scored again.
Pulisic in the hole and Chukwueze out on the right with Johnny Reinders, by the way, behind this hyper offensive.
Yeah, it worked really well.
This is the way they want to play. I don't know if we're going to see this regularly for all these reasons.
Yeah, that was legendary, though.
But it was nice to see them try this out. And Pulisic really on a high heading into the summer.
Great goal.
Paris Saint-Germain are held a 1-1 home draw by Clermont Foot. Another body part. There we go. Yeah. Like the same joke every time. Who are bottom of the table. They're the Sheffield United of Ligue 1.
Yeah, indeed.
Jules, I know it was the C team because the Real Madrid game is coming up.
Barcelona game, yeah.
Two teenagers I'd never heard of, but you probably know all about, who started the game. But still.
Yeah, I mean...
It's still.
Luis Enrique said that he would rotate, make changes. We didn't expect the 11 starters who will start against Barcelona to have a weekend off. And Hakimi came on, but he's suspended for Wednesday night, so he's not going to play against Barcelona. So literally, the 11 starters from the goalkeeper to the number 9 were all pretty much rested for that game, except if Gonzalo Ramos starts against Barcelona. But for the rest, it was very much, like you said, a C team. Zagre and Mayulu, the two young players, 17-year-old, did really well. And, you know, but in the end, I think the most important, even if PSG scored late, they considered a clown goal. And then they scored late. They just didn't want to lose. They're unbeaten in 27 games now in all competitions since the beginning of November. I think they just wanted to keep that momentum.
And they're not worried about Brest coming up behind them, although Brest, of course, still second. By the way, I watched the highlights of this. We watched them on Paris Saint-Germain's official YouTube channel, where then you get little interviews afterwards. So the two guys interview are the guys Mayulu and this guy Zague. Man, you want to have a guy who looks like the happiest boy in the world. You have to go check this out.
You see how quick he is as well? I think he's one of the quickest players I've ever seen.
I don't care. It was like watching a young N'Golo Kante afterwards, smiling.
Nice.
Go on the Paris Saint-Germain, just watch it. Fast forward to the game was rubbish and stuff. But get to the end, these two guys, and you just see him, and he's got this massive smile.
I know. He's a good kid.
So adorable.
After a month and a half, Juventus finally are back to winning ways in Serie A, beating Fiorentina 1-0 thanks to a Federico Gatti goal. Gab, sign of progress? Not really, no.
I mean, yeah, look, two wins in a row, of course, because they beat Lazio in the Coppa Italia.
Yeah, true.
They played fine in the first half. In the second half, Fiorentina just simply battered them. And they sit back and they defend. And look, maybe this worked back in the days of Bonucci and Chiellini and Barzagli. No, no. You're comfortable doing it. This is not comfortable. No. This was horrible fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants thing, and they can't live off the results anymore. And like I said, I think it's time, seriously, to move on.
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen could win the title next weekend, as a result of that Bayern defeat. They beat 10-man Union Berlin 1-0 and have now gone 41 games undefeated. For context, I have a list of teams here.
You have a list. Just quickly on the game, Florian Wirtz with the penalty. What a season.
Robin Gosens getting himself sent off stupidly.
Very stupidly. They were so good again in this game. And Werder Bremen on Sunday at home, where, you're right, a win and it's enough. For the first time ever, they would win the Bundesliga, which would be an incredible achievement on their way maybe to a very incredible treble too.
Tell me about the undefeated
streak. So, undefeated. Thank you for putting the list. Obviously, they are now level with the New Saints from
We don't need to mention
Wales.
Why?
It's a Welsh club. Then Ajax, 42. The great Milan team, of course, 42. Juventus, 2011, 2012, 43. Rangers, early 90s, 44. Rijeka in Croatia, if you like Croatian league, 45. Dinamo Zagreb, 45. Both of them in the mid-2010s. And then the record, of course, is Benfica, 48 games unbeaten run.
So this is the post-war record for someone comes out of the woodwork and says, you know, way back, so I think somebody went 113 games undefeated. But this is since it's European
football.
This
is in all competition, not just in the league, because Arsenal
can set it.
49
they can set it this season.
Yeah, they could set this season. Serge Gnabry scores the only goal as Stuttgart win away at Borussia Dortmund 1-0. Gab, they're level on point with Bayern 9 second and third.
This was what you call a messy game that got out of hand. Dortmund not wanting for intensity. They really needed the win. They didn't get it. You mentioned Schlotterbeck there.
Oh,
at the end, he threw everything up against the wall to see what would stick. It didn't work out for him. But again, shout out to Gyarmolyn.
Amazing.
19 starts in the Bundesliga this season, 3 off the bench, and the man has scored 24 goals. That's Kane-esque. Wild stuff at Villa Park, Jules. They go 2 goals up against Brentford and then find themselves 3-2 down with 10 minutes to go until Ollie Watkins scores to snatch a point.
Yeah, he was back from his injuries, scored 2 goals. I mean, thankfully he was there because they conceded 3 goals in 9 minutes. I mean, I just don't know how you can
But do we count Zanke Jorgensen's goal? Because does that count?
But what I was going to say, so it's not so much that. It's how can you be so much in control?
I don't know. Ask Unai Emery. You're the Unai Emery fan.
At home. And
not
then
me.
You just collapse completely and just... It was such a different team in that maybe they took it for granted and took the eyes off the ball and just thought the second half they would be cruising. But this is really worrying. I think Ollie Watkins had like some quite strong words after the game when he said, you know, we don't have that kind of big team mentality to win those games comfortably. And I think he's right. This is something that has to change because they can't collapse. Another time, you don't come back to even get a point. And I don't know, obviously they play Lille on Thursday, which is going to be a very exciting open game, which it's going to be great, but Lille are a really good team. And then they go to Arsenal on Sunday. And now Spurs are ahead of them, as we said, in fourth on goal difference. So it's only goal difference. It's not too bad. They can still finish fourth. Fifth might be enough for Champions League. I understand that. But that was really worrying, I think.
And Spurs have a game in hand still.
Yeah, true. Of course, you're right. Gianluca Mancini scores the only goal as Roma beat Lazio in the derby to secure their hold on fifth place. But Gab is now being investigated by the Italian FA.
Yeah, first of all, word on Roma, the... Okay, Rome may be the eternal city, but it's also one of those places that's very, very provincial where you have to, if you win the derby, you know, that's how you're judged.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
That's everything.
Right? So it's a big deal that they won it because, of course, under Mourinho, they lost the last couple of derbies. I think, although they did win 1-3-0. But so this certainly cements the legend of the artist formerly known as Captain Future, Daniele De Rossi.
He also said that his dad, who watched the game on this sofa with a blanket, would have been the happiest man on earth. And he said, I'm the happiest man on earth. Nobody could be happier than me.
Yeah, his dad, of course, Roma youth coach. He doesn't go to derbies He says he can't stand the tension. I thought they deserved. They deserved this. Lukaku and Dybala still not where I think they would like to be, but the forward progress is there. They're 3 points away from Bologna in fourth. They were ninth when he took over. This Mancini business is funny. So after the game, he goes, and as they do, they celebrate with the ultras. Somebody gives him a flag, and he starts waving this flag. I don't know if he saw. I'm pretty sure he saw what was on the flag.
Do you think? I didn't think he did.
Okay, I don't know what the big deal is. The Italian FA now, we're all about being nice and, we're going to come at you if you go and wind up the opposition. The flag is it shows a picture of a mouse, possibly a rat, in Lazio colors, right? Oh, this is offensive. We need to investigate. Why do you need to investigate this?
I don't know.
It's a picture of a mouse or a rat.
Well,
who cares?
Well, isn't it because they call Lazio fans or Lazio players...
rats?
Yeah.
Oh, look. How
no, I know, I know, I know.
Oh,
I know.
God, no.
Why I loved them more, I mean, loved and didn't love so much in this game was the ultimate trolling from Paulo Dybala towards Matteo Guendouzi. Of course, when Dybala won the World Cup for Argentina in Qatar in 2022, on his shin pads, has a photo of him on the shin pads lifting the World Cup. And after a bit of a clash with Guendouzi, he took out on purpose the shin pad to show to Guendouzi and troll him. Obviously, Guendouzi, who was on the bench for that final, didn't like. So the kind of clash and the argument, the argy-bargy continued. But I thought from Dybala, it was proper trolling.
It did get feisty. Tremendous atmosphere. Proper derby. Not for everyone. Not for outsiders. People are not from Rome like me. It is a little bit like going on safari, watching the Rome derby. But, it was good. I thought it was a picture of Mrs. Guendouzi on his
it
on
could have been,
shin pads.
But no, it was definitely Dybala with the World Cup.
Our boy, Lois Openda and Leipzig are flying, Jules. It's a massive 4-1 win away at Freiburg. And he scores 2 goals and gets 2 assists.
Amazing. Really amazing, especially because they also overtake Dortmund. They're now in fourth place. Dortmund in fifth. And fifth place might not be enough in the Bundesliga to qualify for Champions League next season. So, well done. Outstanding season. And we said... they had to push the price up because Lens, were very determined to get as much money as possible. They spent a lot of money on him. And I guess it's great to see him being rewarded, see him and Leipzig being rewarded for the investment. An amazing season. And he will get better because there's still things that he can do better. Really, really fantastic season.
Had the worst game possibly of his season, at least the ones I watched, against Real Madrid. And so some people will remember him for that. But he's a tremendous footballer.
Amazing.
Great year.
Napoli turned by the clock and win 4-2 away at Monzaga. We saw some great goals from Politano, Osimhen, and Zielinski. Which one was your favourite?
So my favourite.
For me, it's a clear winner. Clear winner.
You're going to say the Osimhen one where he jumps out of the stadium?
Ah, Politano. No, nothing can beat that volley. Nothing.
Oh, I'm going to go Zielinski because also the backstory. Zielinski, for those who don't know,
I
is
like the
man
story.
Who Napoli and Aurelio De Laurenti says, oh, look, you're not signing a new contract. You're a free agent in June. Huh, I'll punish you by not putting you on the Champions League list. I'm not saying that with... He didn't include him in the Champions League squad, so he wasn't there to face Barcelona. I'm not saying they would have beaten Barcelona with Zielinski, but they certainly would have had a much better chance, especially if the Zielinski we saw on Sunday had shown up. And more broadly, this has got to be bittersweet for Napoli because this takes you back 12 months and you think where they were 12 months ago.
Yeah.
And they think, man, did we really screw it up? What this also tells me is that it's not the players who screwed this up. It's De Laurentiis and it's the Muppet Show of managers, of course. Sure. With, at the top, the master of disaster, Walter Mazzarri. Jules, let's visit the wonderful world of John Textor. His Lyon side beat Nantes 3-1 away. And our boy Alexandre Lacazette scores again. This is an excuse to talk about Textor.
True, although he should have been sent off.
Textor?
No, Laca.
Why not Textor, too?
Well, Textor, I don't think he was there. It was a game behind closed door at the La Beaujoire, so there was nobody you could hear. You know, watching on television, you could hear everything because
so they didn't allow Textor in.
They didn't allow Textor in. It was really bad from Lyon for more than an hour. To be fair, they were one goal down and not very physical, long balls, second balls, all of that, doing the job. And then Stone-wise, Pierre Sage changed the tactics, brought on Fofana, Cherki, Orban. And they turned the game around, and credit to them. Like I said, scored the first one to make it 1-1. Then they had another one straight after. And that was it. They've won now 10 in the last 16 in the league, Lyon. They're in the cup final against PSG, as we said. And they even have a shot for the Conference League place for next season. Maybe even the Europa League place. So,
ooh,
really
can you
incredible
imagine John Textor in the Conference
League? In Europe, man. Incredible.
By the way, just to bring it back to Arsenal and the Havertz center forward thing, allow me to gloat a little bit more. There's a parallel universe where Lacazette realizes that his club is owned by John Textor and joins Arsenal on loan in January. Yeah. I have to say, prime Lacazette, and this may not be, he's 32 now, right?
Yeah. So
he's almost out prime. Like, for his characteristics and the way he plays, he is actually center forward who I think would have been a perfect fit. Maybe not as good as Kai Havertz, who's the best on earth.
Yeah.
But still, a better fit than Nketiah or Gabriel Jesus. By the way, where is Eddie? Is he injured?
No, he came on at the weekend.
Yeah, that's funny, yeah.
Okay. He came on. Yeah. But he was never going to be a starter, really.
No, but it's just funny how, like, even when Jesus was out, it's like, right, let me put Havertz.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe. Just playing up.
Galatasaray won the Super Cup in Turkey, beating Fenerbahce 1-0. But Gab, this wasn't an actual game.
No, it was
That's
a major...
That's an incredible story.
It was a freak show / protest. This was the Super Cup, by the way, which has been postponed several times.
Right, from
we played Saudi Arabia and stuff. And I think it was the anniversary of Kemal Atatürk's birth or death. I genuinely don't know. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but first, Kemal Atatürk is the central figure to Turkish history in the last 150 years. Fenerbahce are very unhappy. They're very unhappy with the league. Remember, they had the debate about withdrawing from the league. They're unhappy with the fact that when they played Trabzonspor and there was a pitch invasion and their players got assaulted. As a result, Trabzonspor only got a 6-game behind closed doors punishment. And several Fenerbahce players were suspended. They were unhappy with the date of this game because they're playing in the Europa League. They were unhappy with the circumstances. So what do? They play the under-19 team.
I love it.
They concede a goal in the first minute. I don't think they conceded intentionally,
by the way. No,
I
don't think so either.
And then they just walk off the pitch. Now, if you were just going to walk off the pitch, by the way, why send the under-19s? Why not send your first team? Make even more of a statement. But I don't know. Look, this is a really bad situation when you have one of your three biggest clubs, maybe the club with the most fans in Turkey, that has just such a problem with the federation and the way it's run right now. I don't want to take sides who's right and wrong. We both said on Thursday that certainly a 6 games behind closed doors for Trabzonspor is not adequate punishment for what happened. That they're taking it to this level from Fenerbahce is really, really serious. They want to force whoever's in charge of the Turkish FA or the league to move out.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going all the way. And I would imagine what they probably should do if they want to affect this change is see if they can get support from the other big clubs in Turkey. I know Galatasaray are bitter rivals, Beşiktaş bitter rivals, yeah. But surely they must be unhappy as well.
Yeah.
West Ham beat Wolves 2-1. Jules, I'd love to talk to you about James Ward-Prowse scoring what much of the world calls an Olympic goal, which is scoring straight from the corner flag.
Direct corner.
But instead, I need to ask you about Max Kilman, Tawanda Chirewa, Lucas Fabianski, and just how angry Gary O'Neill is. And then his boss, the mysterious Jeff Shee.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to say his boss, George Mendes.
No, but Jeff Shee. You know, Wolves are 2-1 down. It's the last minute or so. They score what looked like a valid goal to me on the set piece to make it 2-2. The goal is disallowed. I'm still not really sure why.
So the goal was disallowed because Tawanda Chirewa is standing in front of Lucas Fabianski. And in the view of the AR and the referee, I guess, he is interfering with an opponent. They have criteria.
It's a cross from the right, though. So, like, he's just jumping. There's a crowd of players.
I don't even think he jumps. I think he's just standing there.
Yeah, but, like, well, I mean, he's there for the ball. It's not like if he'd been there and the ball was on the other side.
No.
He was involved in that phase of play.
Yeah. I think it's also a look to me like Fabianski has a pretty clear.
Completely.
He's not in Fabianski's way when he decides to jump or not jump. Fabianski has a very clear, unobstructed view of the header. So, from Max Kilman.
Fabianski himself said it was a goal.
Yeah. So, to me, it's bizarre. To me, though, this is not a VAR issue. And Jeff Shee can go on and be like, oh, VAR, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's not a VAR issue. It's a bad refereeing issue. It's a bad interpretation. If you're the referee, VAR sends you, to go take another look at it. You look at it and you say, gee, I'm sorry. In my subjective opinion, and I am the referee, Chirewa, you following the guidelines as laid out in the laws of the game, Chirewa is not interfering with an opponent, even though he's standing in an offside position. And so this goal stands. That's all you have to do as a match official. So, look, I've raised this before. Between this and the Madison case, if you're Howard Webb, you've shown a willingness to come on television, explain to...
He will again do his thing, though, with Michael.
Do it again. Go on television and tell us what you think. And don't be wishy-washy about
this. It's too bad mistake. It's two bad mistakes again.
That's fine. The only way you're going to fix this is by exposing mistakes. And by the way, I go back to this. I heard listening to a podcast, Sport Unlocked, which I recommend, by the way, after you've listened to this one, where they had an interview with the guy who invented Hawkeye, who came out and he said, like, he envisioned VAR with having VAR specialists rather than just referees on there.
I agree.
I think we have to work towards that goal.
Yeah, I agree. Inter Miami have failed to win in three games now. They were held to a 2-2 draw by the Colorado Rapids this weekend. And now some are suggesting that Xavi might be the right guy to replace Tata Martino when the season ends. Gab, do you like this?
I'm not a huge Tata Martino guy, whereas I adore Xavi, as you know. But what the thinking is, oh, look, you've got all these former Barcelona players, Messi, Busquets, Saba, and Suarez. So Xavi wants a break. Xavi wants a break.
Does he want a break?
I have to assume so. I have to assume he's not just pretending this and says
that. But no, but he just might not want Barcelona anymore with all the pressure and everything. He might fancy Inter Miami for a couple of years.
I think he's already been in a very hot, humid climate. Managing older players when he was in Qatar.
True.
I don't think he needs that. I genuinely think, I take Xavi at face value that he wants a break. And if he returns, it's because they're all begging him on their hands and knees to return, and he makes a sacrifice. I know I'm supposed to be cynical because of the line of work I'm in, but when Xavi speaks, I take him at face value. Beyond that, no, I don't think he'd be right for Inter Miami. I mean, the MLS is a completely different league. It's completely different. Tata Martino, say what you want, but he has a story. He was at Atlanta United. He knows the league.
Yeah, yeah.
Xavi, no. More woe for Ajax, Jules. Their chief executive is being investigated for insider trading, as we reported on Thursday.
Yeah.
And now they lose to Feyenoord, 6-0.
6-0, the heaviest defeat ever. Ever of all time, or ever any players, any era, any coach, they were just humiliated. And to be fair, it could have been worse than 6.
Need a bunch of kids out on the pitch.
And what?
They're not going to get relegated this year. And at one point, it looked like they might get relegated. Table.
Yeah, I know. But it's still the worst season ever. It's dreadful because they were close from the bottom, obviously, at the start of the season. It's been a little bit better. Clear to say that our friend Jordan Johan Cruyff Henderson didn't change anything to this shambles, maybe even adding to the shambles because, as we know, he's not very good. I just don't know what to say. It's just one of the seasons to forget. And try to move on from
it won't be easy. To Graham Potter.
He will not be with Graham Potter, who apparently turned them down.
Oh, what about Jordan Henderson as player coach?
Oh my God, that's a great idea. Right. That is a great idea. What could go wrong? The Daily Mail reports that the Premier League are considering a luxury tax as part of their profit and sustainability regulations. What does that mean, Gav?
So this story, like, people saw the word luxury tax and be like, oh, great. So
like in the NBA.
It'll be like in the NBA where you've got a certain limit. And if you go beyond that limit, then for every pound you go over, you pay a pound into a central pot that gets redistributed among the teams and so on. My understanding is, even the proposal, it's not going to work like this. First of all, it's a big headache to realize, well, what do we do with this extra money?
Yeah.
How do we redistribute it? Because in the NBA, there's no relegation, so you give it to the weaker teams to be competitive. But the NBA, you know, the gap in wage bill from the top team to the bottom team, I think it's like a factor of 1.8 or 1.9 to 1. In the Premier League, it's like 10 to 1, or if not more. So that's one issue. The other thing is they don't want people just to spend as much as they like and just chuck money in, because that still raises, not only does it make it,
of course,
unfair for others, it still raises the cost for everyone, right? So they say, well, if we do this, there'll still be some element of a sporting sanction, which is a points penalty. So maybe the thinking is there'd be less of a points penalty. So for example, if you're, say, Nottingham Forest, you've been hit, I think, was it 4 points that they've been docked? Could that nice Mr. Marinakis say, okay, dock me 2 points, but here's 50 million or something that I'm going to put into some pot. But then what do you do with a pot?
Yeah.
Because again, people are like, oh, support grassroots, give it to the lower leagues, give it to Reading, who, sorry, it's another Producer Freddie reference. I really apologize for this. The problem is people are like, well, if you give it to clubs, they're just going to spend it on wages. And then what good is that to anybody, right? So it's complicated. It's something you can consider looking at, I guess.
Yeah.
But the sporting sanctions, if you break the rules, have to be there. And that means you have to have points, penalties, relegation, transfer embargoes, stuff like that. Yeah. Otherwise, you can just pay your way out of prison.
Yeah.
Wild finish in the Old Firm, Jules, says Rabbi Matondo. Remember him? Former Man City and Schalke star.
Of course.
Rabbi Matondo gets the late, late injury time equalizer against Celtic.
Incredible game. Celtic were 2-0 up. Of course, they're 1 point clear of Rangers, who have a game in hand before this game. They were 2-0 up at halftime. Then Rangers came back in the second half, scored the second goal to make it 2-2 in the 86th minute. Then we thought, okay, this is it. There's only one winner here. Either it stands as a draw or Rangers were going to win it. But Celtic and Adam Ida scored the third goal to make it 3-2 in the 88th minute. It was just mad at Ibrox completely. And then when Celtic then obviously went 4 points clear, it looked like the titles would be theirs. However, Rabbi Matondo scored, I think, in the 94th minute. Great goal, too, to make it 3-3. Back to 1 point in between with the game in hand for Rangers, as we said, against Dundee, I think, on Wednesday night. But then there will also be another Celtic Rangers at Celtic Park later down in the season. So this is going to be to the wire. It's amazing. And well done, I think, to both Brendan Rodgers and Philippe Clement for the entertainment, the spectacle that was. Great game, great intensity, great atmosphere. Brilliant. Really good. Defender Corbin Albert.
Isn't it Corbin Albert?
No, we don't.
But she plays for Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, but we don't Parisianize her name.
And so she's definitely not French.
Not born and bred.
She's not related to you, even though she kind of looks like, if she were like a tall female version of you, she kind of looks like you, Jules.
Yeah, but no. Corbin can stay American. And she got booed, Gab, by her own fans when she came on for the U.S. women team against Japan in the 2-1 victory in the She Believes Cup.
So, yeah, so the reason she got booed is to do with the fact that she apparently liked on social media a post by an evangelical preacher that, like, a lot of people saw it as transphobic and more generally homophobic. It's obviously a big issue especially in the women's game, because it's anti-LGBT. There's obviously a lot of players who are LGBT, members of the LGBTQ community. I think there's a broader point to be made, even in the men's game, where there's very few players who are out.
Yeah.
If the policy of your team or of your league is to be inclusive, and you come out and say stuff like this, you're entitled to your views, but if you share them, you are effectively an employee, and you have to live by certain rules. So the U.S. international women's team coach came out, spoke about this. Alex Morgan spoke about it. A lot of people came out and said, if you want to be part of this, you're entitled to your views, but you can't share your views in public in a certain way. And I think that's entirely normal.
Yeah.
It's the same way, like, a company I work for, ESPN, is owned by Disney. If I started coming out and sharing views that, I don't know, something to do with characters wearing Mickey Mouse ears is weird or wrong or unnatural, somebody might tap me on the shoulder, and rightly so.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are certain values that the U.S. Soccer Federation stands for. And if you're not on board with that, if you go against them, they have a right not to call you up. Now, she did come out. She apologized for this profusely. Again, I'm not telling her what to think. Everybody can think what they like. But when you represent something, you either go along with it or you keep your mouth shut. Cameroon have a new national team head coach, a fellow named Mark Brees, who apparently is Belgian.
He is, indeed.
It's just funny. So Belgium has Brees and Bruce. Okay. Hugo Bruce, I don't remember him.
Yeah.
But reportedly, when he was appointed, they didn't tell the Cameroon FA, or Fekafoot, as they like to call themselves, that he was hired.
Yeah, that's right. Samuel Eto'o, the president of the Cameroon Federation, didn't know anything about it because he was chosen by the sports minister. And as often, especially in Africa, but not just in Africa, but in some countries, there's a big fight between the sports minister and the federation, the football federation, on who wants to have the power, who wants to make the decision. Now Eto'o is saying, you know what, I'm going to name my own head coach. So I don't know if they would have two head coaches.
Oh my God, it would be like Roy Evans and Gerard Houllier at Liverpool in the dynasty.
But really, if you're Mark Brees, if you're Eto'o as the head of the federation, you can sack Mark Brees whenever you want. He's employed by you, not employed by the government. It's not the government paying him, it's the federation paying him.
It's not just that. If, without getting too far in the weeds of FIFA regulations, FIFA have very clear regulations that against government interference in federation business, which some people would say they selectively enforce. If they want to go after this, I mean, they could suspend Cameroon for allowing the government to make a decision that belongs to the federation, i.e. Fekafoot. By the same token, they might be reluctant to do this because I don't know if Samuel Eto'o is still under investigation.
I think so.
But he's had so many charges against them, said so many issues that they're kind of like maybe taking a step back and be like, all right, both sides are icky in this one. I do feel for Mark Brees. I don't want to make fun of the guy.
It's weird, though, that you accept a job that you haven't even spoken to the president of your federation. It's weird, though. Maybe he should have said, you know what?
The dude's Belgian, right? You're nearly Belgian.
I know,
he's one of yours.
Yeah, but
is he from Paris? Has he been to Paris?
No, I think he's... No. But I think he's coached a lot in Africa and the Middle East, I think, if I remember well. But yeah, he should have known. Dinamo Zagreb purchased a full page of advertising in the Spanish daily Marca newspaper, Gab, and the message was really simple but effective.
Yeah, it's the picture of the number 10 shirt with Modric on it. Obviously, he's out of contract in the summer.
They want him back home.
Modric, of course, an avid reader of Marca, and also a guy who was easily influenced by advertising. No, I'm kidding. Look, this is a nice gesture. Let's not read too much into it. Modric doesn't need this to convince him to come back. If he wants to go back, he will. If he wants to make an extra paycheck somewhere else, he can do that. If he persuades Ancelotti and Real Madrid to keep him around, maybe in an even greater, you know, even in more reduced role because time is undefeated and he's getting older, you know, he'll make his decision. But I think it's a nice gesture. Again, Modric knows he's loved in Zagreb, and I don't think there's any question there. But it is nice, and it gives us an excuse to talk about Dinamo Zagreb. Monterrey beat Inter Miami 2-1 in the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinal first leg last Wednesday. But, Joel, since then, Assistant coach of Monterrey, Nico Sanchez, had to issue an apology to Lionel Messi.
Yeah, that's right, Gab, because there was a leaked audio message where you can hear him calling Leo Messi a dwarf and saying that Messi had the face of the devil. When you know that Nico Sanchez is Argentine too, you know, it's even harder to understand why you would say things like that. Why would you hate Lionel Messi so much when he's one of yours and he's just won you the World Cup, by the way?
Well, he didn't win Nico. He won the country the World Cup.
Yeah,
So obviously, like, dwarf, we don't speak in these terms anymore. It's not accessible. It's not acceptable. If he's talking to his friend, whatever. The face of the devil thing, I actually think that's something you should apply. That's kind of cool.
Like, Nico Sanchez has some issues, right? Surely he's got.
I don't think he literally means that Messi is demonic, but if you're an intense competitor and stuff like that, it's not necessarily a bad thing saying that, you know, you're playing with demonic intensity. It's kind of cool, badass.
But Messi didn't play that first leg because, so the second leg, I think, where he's supposed to fit, because he played in MLS in between, should be interesting because he would actually be there on the pitch with Nico Sanchez, would be in the dugout, right?
Looking old. How cool would it be if Nico Sanchez asked him for an autograph?
Or his shirt, even. Yeah. Serge Aurier is making headlines for the wrong reasons once again, Gab.
Okay, so first of all, I was alerted to this by Freddie the producer, who I think spends a lot of time on Snapchat.
Yes.
I think the only two people above the age of 15 who are on Snapchat are Freddie the producer
and Serge Aurier.
I think this is really offensive. He's talking about Zinchenko, and he said, and I quote here, he says, stop your cinema, meaning like stop making such a big deal out of it, and go there right now, meaning to Ukraine. A real volunteer doesn't need anyone to call him up. Apparently this is to do with Zinchenko saying that he would go and be willing to fight in the war and stuff like that. Now, several points to this. Like, there's a very practical point, which has to do with the fact that we often forget about wars that have been going on for a while. There's wars going on all over the world, sadly. How often do we think about Nagorno-Karabakh? So having a high-profile professional athlete who also makes a lot of money from Arsenal and donates a lot of money to Ukraine might be more beneficial than having Zinchenko sit in a trench somewhere. But beyond that, I'm asking myself, what kind of a person does this? What kind of a person, how dare you go?
Mind your own business as well, if you're Serge. What's got to do with you?
But what are you, like the universal judge of hypocrisy? Like, what kind of a crappy, bad person goes and speculates on somebody else's dying and destruction? May Serge Aurier never experience anything like this, you know, when there is a war. I don't know. For some reason, this really bugs me.
Yeah,
More that he's an adult and he's on Snapchat, which I think is kind of odd.
I mean, it's not. Remember when he was on Periscope and he insulted Laurent Blanc when he was his manager? I mean, he was the only one on Periscope as well at the time. Do you remember Periscope?
Yes. He was on Periscope like 10 years after Periscope was a thing. Yes.
Exactly.
I think Freddie flagged that one too.
I'm sure.
He likes being kind of retro.
He loves those dodgy social media stuff.
All right, Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Thursday. You know why?
The Champions League
is back. Some huge semifinals coming up. I'm going to be at Arsenal. You're going to be at Paris Saint-Germain. How about that? We're going to be back on Thursday then. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.